Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to bring you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can download our podcasts on iTunes or download our shows at www.restaurantguysradio.com.
And, of course, you can also follow us on Twitter where you will catch our occasional tweets. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I don't tweet.
I know. I'm the tweeter in this partnership. Anyway.
I am tweetless.
That is just a straight line that I need to walk away from is
good.
What that is.
I'm glad.
And I'm walking away. Here are the steps. You're walking away. Okay, so let's talk about food writing. We're going to talk about truffles later in the show. We have a truffle purveyor coming on the show who has some really cool stuff. There is something new under the sun and even under the ground, and that is... We'll be talking about that in the next segment of the show, but first I want to talk about food writing. Did you know, and I know that you do know, that Brett Anderson, who was the restaurant critic for the Times-Picayune, was fired?
Well, you know, reviewers get fired all the time. I mean, that's just the way the world works. But I think this is more of a new world firing than an old world firing.
Well, what's interesting about it is there's a takeover of the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And... they fired 200 employees and offered many of them jobs in the new company. They did not offer him a job. And he has gone on a fellowship. The official reason for the firing was that he was taking a fellowship for a year. But he says, and I certainly do believe him, he says that the fellowship was with the full consent and encouragement of the editors who fired him. And it was assumed he was going to come back. That was never in question. And so it's a little odd. And, you know, Brett Anderson, he is a great food writer. He's the guy who wrote about the recovery from Katrina.
Sure. Any New Orleans food writer would have written about the recovery of Katrina, but
True.
He's really the guy that most people associate with a lot of those
I'd
stories.
Say he's the voice of New Orleans to the rest of the world.
But, you know, I think this is a symptom, Francis. I think that what we've seen, you've seen... magazines that were around for a long, long time.
Gourmet.
Fold, okay, mm-hmm. Food magazines.
Yeah.
But wait, not just food magazines, but other print magazines.
Right.
You've seen the food sections of every newspaper
decimated.
In the country.
Decimated.
Just literally shrinking, you know, to nearly nothing. I don't want to say to nearly nothing, but quite a bit. Every newspaper in America has seen a reduction of its food section, anybody who had a food section. And I think this just may be another... you know, a casualty of that, of the new world. It may be another casualty of, you know what, print media is losing some of its dollars to, you know, the non-conventional, we'll say, which is now becoming the conventional, but the non-conventional media. There's a change.
Non-print.
Non-print, right. But there's a shift, and I guess there are, so with it so easy to have a voice now, there are so many small voices, and maybe all those small voices are outweighing the one large voice.
You know, I think it's great to have a balance, but it's important to have people who work full time.
That's exactly where I was going.
As food writers.
We need our experts.
Yeah.
You have to have your experts in the field. It can't all be, you know, which way the wind is blowing and
crowdsourced journalism.
Mob mentality journalism.
Well, that's a little harsh. Mob. It sounds like they're going to burn down the restaurant. I mean, they've burnt down his job,
haven't they?
Well, you know, talk about integrity. After Katrina, what he did, and I thought this was phenomenal, for 3 years, he stopped reviewing restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote about restaurants
right.
every week. He wrote about how New Orleans was picking itself up by the bootstraps, the different things as the New Orleans food scene tried to bring itself back, which is what really, I mean, endeared him to the hearts of so many across America, because that was... you know, and New Orleans is a food city.
Right. Don't be giving one star to a restaurant that just rebuilt after Katrina.
So he said that's not what we need right now. Mm-hmm. Right now we need some cheerleading and some, you know, and it's not like they had never had a food scene before and they were just cheerleading for no reason. He said, no, we're recovering from a tragedy. We're recovering mm-hmm. from an illness. And for 3 years I won't review. And then in 3 years he started reviewing again.
Yep.
I thought that was just so freaking smart. So
Absolutely.
Much integrity. So great. And not to mention his writing was phenomenal.
And that's what the city needed. And the city needed to be built back up.
Mm-hmm.
And it needed people like him to help it build that build it back up. And I guess that's part of the tragedy here. Part of this tragedy is, you know, New Orleans needed somebody like Brett Anderson to help it build it back up. And it hurts to see this. And again, this is, it's not just happening in New Orleans. It's happening across the country where food journalists, and I don't really consider Francis and I food journalists. We're restaurant people who kind of talk to you guys about it.
Personalities.
Food, yeah, okay.
Journalists would be extreme exaggeration.
But food journalists, the folks who write for the New York Times, who wrote for Bon Appetit, who write for Savoir, who write for Good Housekeeping, those people are really important to the industry. They're really important to I think, you know, the everyday person who reads these articles. They're integral to the system, and I see the system changing, and I don't see that it's going to be better for it. I think it's worse for it. There's less information out there. There's dumbed down information out there. You know, I don't see it. I don't see that this change in the paradigm is making for better information. I think it's making for worse information. It's making for more information,
right,
but worse information.
And there's some good information among the more mm-hmm. information, but you know, when you have, you know, the other thing that he did was, if you want to find what's really New Orleans cuisine, what Cajun cuisine really is as opposed to Creole cuisine, where it came from and what's a modern expression of it, and what's somebody building a flashy building to sell to tourists, or even, you know, just marketing the lowest common denominator food, you can go and look at all the information out there, but if you had Brett Anderson, you could look at Brett Anderson and you could have a trusted source.
And you don't, you know, that, I guess that's something that, you know, I realized a long time ago in reading restaurant reviews. I don't agree with every restaurant review
not.
I read from, even if it's from, you know, the top professional, the most respected professional that I've ever read. You know,
yeah, of course.
It doesn't matter who it is. But there is a point of view, and I think that it's important to have professional points of view of these are things that, you know, that separate the quality.
Well, anyway, so I hope Brett Anderson lands on his feet. I hope he lands on his feet in a way that he can keep writing about New Orleans, because he's important to that city, and that city's important to America, and he's important to telling their story. But I just wanted to bring that to people's attention, and he's a writer that you should continue to follow. He's got this fellowship for the coming year, and I'm confident he'll land on his feet, and we got to keep reading him. So stick with us. We're talking to our Truffle Man in just a moment. Truffle Man! Sorry, I don't know where that came from. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys at RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. And our guest today is a guy we've never actually met in person, but we were so enamored of the business relationship we've forged with this gentleman and the product that we're getting from him, and we're really compelled by it. We're pleased to welcome Frank Brunacci to the show.
Hey, Frank. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for inviting me, guys. It's great to be here.
Frank's company is called The Chef's Diamond, and Frank contacted me by email. Did you spam me? How did you find me?
I don't know. I do a lot of spamming. No, actually, I was one of the guys at the... I probably met you at Star Chef.
Oh, that's right. Year. Yeah, Star Chef's International Chef's Congress. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I was actually there, and I was shaving truffles for everybody. So I probably got a business card of you or your contact through Star Chef's or somehow.
That's a really good way to get my attention, by the way. Shave truffles at me.
Yeah, I'm going. So let's explain to folks that Frank has brought to our attention. First of all, we started dealing with Frank about a year ago in buying fresh truffles. I think he's an and truffle purveyors are, you really need to trust your truffle purveyor. You're talking about investing maybe $1,400 a pound, maybe $800 a pound, depending on the types of truffles you're buying.
Maybe $2,500 a pound.
And, you know, there are truffles and there are truffles, and the truffles we've always gotten from Frank are actual truffles. Did that make any sense to anyone? I think it does, you know. But what has been really fascinating is an email we got from Frank promising Australian winter truffles, and of course right now in Australia it's winter, and that they would be every bit as good as great Perigord black truffles from France, which are not available at this time of year. And God damn it, Frank, you were right.
Well, you know, I want you to hold your thought, because I gave you the first shipment, and the first shipment, the maturity level does not really kick in until probably week three or week four. So you've got the first delivery that ever came into the United States. So we are hitting week three this week, and then we'll be week four next week. So next week's truffles are going to be absolutely gobs. It's going to drive everybody nuts how good they are.
I tell you, one of my favorite things, we wrote an email to our clients at the restaurant, our guests at the restaurant. One of our favorite things is to find new things mm-hmm. that are novel. And I had never heard,
this is a product that you brought to us. I literally had never seen it in a restaurant and had never had it before.
Never heard of it. Has Australia always known that they can harvest truffles?
Can I tell you a funny story?
Please.
When I was at the pre-opening office at Trump International in Chicago, it was back in 2007, I had the people from the Trades Commissioner come in, because, you know, Australia's got a consul general here in Chicago, so they came out to visit with me. For me, you know, they knew I was an Aussie, so trying to, you know, push some Aussie products on me, because that's what the Trade Commissioner does. So he came and met with me, and, you know, it was the off-season, but they brought me truffle salt, and they brought me truffle oil, and they brought me truffle butter, and all this sort of stuff. So I'm smelling it, and I'm like, yeah, it smells really good, but, you know, to me, it could be all fake. It could just be an oil. It could be, you know, it could
right.
be just infused
sure.
or mechanically driven. So until I actually see the real thing, I cannot believe that they're going to be that good.
Right.
Then about 7 months later, I got an email out of the blue from the people at the Wine and Truffle Farm looking for somebody in Chicago that could distribute their product. Because they were just breaking into the U.S. market at that stage. I mean, they'd probably been coming out of the ground since 2005, but they were really breaking in around 2008 into the U.S. market. So I was like, well, I was thinking about it. My wife, she's a stay-at-home mom. I work all day. I said, you know, it's a three-month season. I said, I know every truffle-buying chef in Chicago, and I probably know a good 20 or 30 around the USA. Why don't we try it and see what could happen? I told my wife, I said, you know, this could really be a gold mine, because at the end of the day, the truffles will be under that ground forever. I mean, those truffles and that farm will be there for a long time. This is a legacy for us, for our family, for kids and everything else. So we went for it, and we told the guys that we'd love the opportunity. So they came out and flew down here to meet with us. It was 2009, actually. The 2009 season was the first year that we took them. The first shipment that came in, my wife went to go pick them up because I was working all day. I came home, it was like 11 o'clock at night. I opened up the door to my house, and we only brought in about 3 or 4 pounds. I opened up the door to my house, and I've got a 4,000 square foot home.
Right.
The stench of Perigord in my house, the aroma from 3 pounds, and I mean, they were open, they were closed, they were put back in the fridge, was in my, I could not believe it.
Really?
It was the summertime. So it was like, from the moment I first saw them, I smelled them, I was just in love, and I just knew that this was an opportunity of a lifetime, that we had to go for it. So what I did was, excuse me, as a chef, I would go to a lot of the events in the city of Chicago, where I'm doing a little taste for everybody, and I would bring my wife behind me, and I'd say, you know what, let me introduce you to all the chefs that I know that are here, and we'll just bring out the truffle and we slice them for the chefs and they taste them, and no one could believe that they're fresh truffles coming from Australia. So the first year we probably sold about 40 pounds. The USA sold, I think, about 170. Now, in our second year of doing it, the Australian people came out to visit with me because they wanted to meet all their distributing partners, and I said, look, the best thing that we can do is that I know a lot of the distributors around the country. I mean, because I've, as a chef for 25 years, I deal with, you know, everyone when they have truffles, they make these cold calls to try and get your business.
Right.
So I know these people by name. I've spoken to them. I've dealt with them at certain levels, you know, some that I take from, some that I don't. So I have that connection. And so because of that, I want to be the guy that imports them. And then when they come to Chicago, I will then spread them across the country. So that's what we tried in our second year. And we went from 180 pounds as a country to 950 pounds last year.
You're like our old Johnny Truffle Seed, is there?
I've self-proclaimed myself as King Truff. I'm in charge of the Australian truffle season. The guys in Australia trust me a lot with their product. Obviously, we're trying to push and promote. Japan used to be the number one supplier of Australian truffles because that would take quite a bit. But last year, we eclipsed them. And then we're in week three of this year, and we're already three times the amount of truffles that we bought at week three last year.
That's fantastic.
How long has Australia been producing, you know, top quality truffles like this?
In 1985, as far as I know, 1985, the guy that is at the Wine and Truffle Company, they went to France and studied the region. And it took a good 6 or 7 years of research and knowledge and all it to understand the truffle, the background, the scientific nature. They took all that information from Périgord, went to Australia, opened up the map and said, where is the most prone area in this country that if we put a truffle in the ground, that it will grow? And they found it in Manjimup up in Western Australia. So in 1995, they planted 13,000 hazelnut and oak trees. And then they waited. They had to wait 10 years. You know, obviously, you have to feed the soil a lot of the ions and the minerals that needs the truffle. Every tree becomes inoculated with a slurry of Périgord. And, you know, Périgord, excuse me, truffles are a virus, just a bacteria. Just like a West Nile virus could be caught in this country or in New York, and it's the same strain. It's the same with the truffle. It's a strain of bacteria. So if the tree is infected with this strain and the soil is the right content, the same minerality, and then the earth and the sun is shining the same amount of times it shines in Périgord, the same amount of times it shines in Manjimup, same amount of rainfall, the same amount of rainfall, so everything is unique and identical. So what comes out of the ground is an identical truffle. The great thing about Australian truffles, to me, is that every truffle, because it's one farm, every truffle that comes out of the ground, to me, is the same as the one that came before. When I bring in the truffles from the European season, it drives me bananas because, you know, they've got other things like Brumali, which get mixed into the batch, which is an inferior truffle. And there's Chinese truffle, which is coming out at the same time.
That's one of the things I would love to talk about for just a second, if we can, Frank.
Sure.
You know, 2020 did a piece that a lot of my customers saw on truffles a couple of months back where, you know, they talked about how, you know, Chinese truffles are getting mixed in and they're inferior and less expensive. And, you know, truffles from other parts of the world that aren't of the same quality are getting mixed in with truffles. My first thing to you is Australian truffles are off season, so you're not having some of the same issues, I guess.
Australian truffles are not in the same
season. I'm sorry,
off
season to the French truffles. So you're not having some of those same issues. But also, I mean, as a truffle purveyor, I could see if somebody sent me 30 pounds of truffles that they could mix in some Chinese truffles and I might not notice by the looks of it.
Right.
But as somebody who uses the truffles every day, how could a consumer, a restaurant, slice a Chinese truffle and not see that it's different?
Or smell.
And smell that it's different and feel that it's different and taste that it's different from a Périgord or an Australian truffle?
Well, true Périgord has a wonderful aroma. Mm-hmm. A Chinese truffle literally has zero.
Zero. It has zero, and it has, and the texture's wrong, and it tastes like cardboard.
There's a marbling effect to the truffle, and it's more brown than it is white. You know, a true Périgord will have white lines going through it, the white marbling.
Mm-hmm.
When you get later on into the season, when it becomes really mature, those lines tend to go more brownish than they do whitish. But that's usually because it's getting very cold, starting to become a little bit more rainy. and then, you know, obviously the trees produce all it can produce and they can't produce anymore. But, you know, Périgord truffles will grow in the summertime, in the wintertime, in the fall, any time of the year they will grow. The only thing is they won't become mature until the earth or Mother Nature says, hey, we're going to turn it cold. Once you turn it cold, you switch on the tap. When you turn it hot, you switch off the tap.
Mm-hmm. If they don't taste the same if they come at the wrong time.
Well, and let's just educate everybody out there. You will find this time of year something called summer truffles, and those are you really see a lot of Chinese truffles blended in with those, and which is why you need to trust your purveyor.
Well, you won't find any Chinese truffles now. You won't find any Chinese truffles until the probably January,
right?
Until probably the end of March. That's when the Chinese truffle is at its peak.
But what you'll see now in the summer truffles is there just, they just don't have the aroma. They have, you know, a faint whiff of aroma. It's nothing like black truffles in season. And so being able to get in the summertime for us, it's really crazy. I've never seen this in my whole life. To be able to get truffles, real in-season truffles this time of year.
It's been a very exciting year for us, and I have really enjoyed it. You know, you said that they're the same, and I'm going to disagree with you just with the limited experience that I have with the Australian truffles. I didn't find them to be exactly the same. I found now you said it's early in the season, so we haven't seen as much of the aromas develop. But they were very aromatic, but I found them to be almost fruitier than the Perigord truffle. I found it, it was very pleasantly unique, where the Chinese truffle is unpleasantly unique. The Australian truffle was pleasantly unique, and I thought had some of its own characteristics that are going to make it not an imitation of Perigord, but its own thing. I mean, I really do think you're underappreciating, you know, what Australia's doing for those truffles.
I know. I mean, it's funny because a lot of people say different things, but the best way that they've explained to me and what I've heard, and there's a truffle pope, Ralph Boss, who is in Germany, and he's considered the truffle pope in Europe. And what he said to the guys at the farm in Australia, he said, he deals a lot of truffle. So he's like, if I take, during the European season, 10 Perigord truffles from Perigord, and take 10 Perigord truffles from Manjimup in Western Australia, and I put them to my nose, 4 out of 10 from Europe will be perfect, absolutely perfect aroma, perfect everything. But from Australia, 8 out of 10 will have that perfection. So the consistency of the product, and we don't deal, the northern winter deals with the truffle market, and that's where, you know, the black market's out, people are hunting, they're selling out the back of their cars, they're mixing in bags, you get stuff from Italy, Spain. Every terroir has a different aroma because it's a different soil content. The tree is what's producing the fruit, but the soil is dictating the aroma. So Perigord from France and Perigord from Spain are two different Perigords, and Perigords from Italy are completely different again. And then you've got different regions in France where the Perigord is coming from different areas. So a Perigord can have a slight tinge. The aroma of Perigord is one type. The flavor profile, some people say it's more charcoal-y, more chocolatey. So the things you're saying are absolutely correct. But when it comes from Australia has... try this one off the side. Australia has 150 farms that are considered trufferies in Australia.
Wow.
150. Now, get this. Out of those 150, 6 farms produce 90% of Australia's production. Hmm. And of those 6 farms, the Wine and Truffle Company produces 55% of the crop for Australia.
Wow.
So consider that. And to put it into perspective, they have 13,000 trees, the Wine and Truffle Company, does 55% of the market. There are 500,000 truffle trees that are planted in Australia. A lot of the people are planting in trees and aren't getting truffles because either the soil's not right or the tree was too old when they injected it with the slurry. So there's, you know, but you'll never know because you've got to plant it in 10 years, you've got to wait and hope, you know, the Mother Nature thing does its thing, you know what I mean? There's so much science that goes behind it.
Well, our listeners may not know that, you know, truffles just kind of appear. You know, you've seen the truffle hunters and out with the, you know, what used to be pigs and now with dogs, you know, out foraging for truffles because... You're never really sure where a truffle is going to appear. There are places that they're likely.
Right. And you can inoculate, but...
There's no guarantees here. And
right.
Truffles are very expensive. They are very expensive. And so it's a lot of science has been put into, hey, how do we recreate this? And there are very few success stories like this Australian one.
Yeah, and that's where I think we differ, well, the Wine and Truffle Company differs, because they put so much science into production to produce and cultivate, but for finding and hunting, it's 100% old-fashioned. All they did was create the ground and the atmosphere for the environment to produce, and then Mother Nature makes... But they cannot go and find a truffle without a dog, without the hunters. otherwise, they're just going to be stuck with...
You know, it's funny. You made allusion to the truffle market and how not being in the truffle market. Basically, all the American truffles from roughly 40% of the production of Australia comes through you. And we can certainly vouch for your integrity. Because, and it's nice to have it go from the source to one person and then be distributed out. And it comes from you, FedEx. When we were first in the business, our restaurant's been around for 20 years or so, and we worked in other restaurants before that. But buying truffles in New York was literally like, oh, I know a guy.
Right.
You got to have cash.
Right.
Meet him in the back of the restaurant. He's got truffles in his trench coat. And, you know, then there were some, you know, good truffle companies, but you never could quite be sure. You know, maybe your purveyor got duped. You never could trace it all the way back because no one wanted you to know where their truffles came from because they were protecting the source.
Absolutely.
And so the amazing thing about it is I prefer getting truffles. And honestly, we also buy truffles now from you in the wintertime, which are fantastic. But this summer truffle thing is crazy. And you know what? I found the texture to be a slight bit different. We got a dish in the restaurant that overheard at the bar. One of my customers said we did lobster with some fingerling potatoes it was poached in brown butter and served with some sugar snap peas. And then we shaved truffles on top, you know, while the butter is still warm enough to absorb into the truffles. And he said, I do not have words that are sufficiently effusive in my vocabulary to tell you how good this lobster is. Because lobsters are great this time of year. But what I saw that was interesting that I haven't seen in the Perigords in the wintertime, we shaved them very thin on the plate, and it sort of hit the lobster claw and the warm butter, and it just sort of melted itself in. It sort of absorbed the shape of the lobster. It seemed to be texturally different to me, and it was glorious. Glorious. Are they texturally different, in your opinion?
Again, it all depends on... Things will change. I mean, a truffle... If a truffle will slice differently depending on how they're coming out of the ground, because sometimes if there's a big frost and there's kind of like a slight freeze to the ground and it may freeze the truffle a little bit, it will have a different texture once you start slicing it. And it probably will slice a little more flimsy. These Australian truffles, they will slice. I mean, they're incredible because, you know, they found the perfect environment for the truffle. But that's not to say that tomorrow the Antarctic, you know, says, hey, let's send all our weather to, you know, Western Australia, and all of a sudden the truffle season's over.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a question. When you're importing winter truffles, let's stop talking about Australian truffles for a minute. When you're importing winter truffles, do you have a problem with counterfeiters? Do you have a problem with people putting truffles in that you then have to sort out after they come to you?
I've seen Brumali mixed in with the Perigord, but not like it may be one every 25 pieces,
mm-hmm.
and it's usually probably just missed if it comes in. But, you know, a lot of the times when you're... I mean, we do the same thing. I mean, we've got 150 pounds, and we've got, you know, 35 or 50 orders coming in because we deal with a lot of distributors who take, like, 20 pounds.
Sure.
I'm not going through them one by one. I'm literally taking, repacking, and resending. And then you know, what we do is we guarantee every truffle that we send. So if you want the truffle...
Frank, I can vouch for you here on this radio show that we've been buying truffles now from you for over a year, and... I've never seen a single truffle that didn't belong.
Yeah.
I think I use the chef approach when it comes to grading my own truffles, because if I wouldn't put it on my menu in a kitchen, I certainly wouldn't give it to somebody expecting to sell it.
Well, Frank, we have very little time left, but I certainly want to give you a plug. We have a lot of chefs who listen to the show and some really crazy foodie consumers who might try and get some truffles as well. How do they find you?
You know, they can go to the www.thechefsdiamond.com. My email address is kingtruff@gmail.com. And depending on where they are, you know, I'll put them in touch with the right distributor that's in their area who are getting our truffles.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've got people on the ground. Some people we direct ship to, obviously, because we don't have anybody on the ground. But, you know, we have other distributors that do that too. So people may want to use me. People may not. As long as they're using Australian truffles from the Wine and Truffle Company, that I'm a happy man.
Yeah, and if you're using, if you want to try Australian truffles or Frank's winter truffles, you know, we have them at the restaurant. If you want to buy a single truffle from us, or you know, we'll be happy to facilitate
those. And I just want to point out something.
New Jersey.
I want to point out something that we have just done that radio hosts might have done before, but very few restaurateurs and chefs would really do, is to publicly tell you who they buy their awesome truffles from. And we've just done that to 100,000 people. So, Frank, remember when all the demand comes in that who's in line first. Who's in line
who
first?
Your friends are, yeah.
For sure. We'd love that.
I think it's tremendous what you do there. It's great. We're going to put your website up on restaurantguysradio.com, and we're going to have truffles for lunch this afternoon.
Thanks for bringing Australian truffles to the United States.
Yeah.
It is a great boon to those of us who miss them, 8 or 9 months a year.
You know, I think people do miss them.
Yeah.
Know? That's what I found when I was at the Trump, and I would sell 3 or 4 pounds a week.
You know, but in the famous words of Inspector Clouseau, not anymore. So hope you all have enjoyed talking with Frank. Stick with us. We'll be back on the other side. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys at restaurantguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of The Restaurant Guys Radio Show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. These are a few of my favorite things.
Well, you know, Francis and
caviar and truffles.
We seem a little bit excited about this, and it's really true, because what basically someone has told us is, you know, we love strawberries during local strawberries,
right,
during strawberry season, and when they're perfect and ripe and delicious, and with truffles, too. You can buy truffles off-season, and they're not so great, okay? And the same thing like you can do with strawberries. You can buy them off-season or from California or from hothouses or whatever, and they're not so great. They're only great 3 or 4 weeks a year. What someone has just told Francis and me is, hey, you can have those really cool strawberries in the off-season now, too.
I love truffles in the springtime. I love truffles in the fall.
Please stop singing.
I love truffles every morning. Sorry.
I begged you. I begged you.
But I really do. I got to say, rarely do you hear us, and you listen to our show we've been on for 6 years, do we say, we have a purveyor who sells us stuff, and we want to get him on the show. No money changed hands, by the way. He's a little guy. He's not a sponsor. He's just...
Frank's a great source for our truffles in the wintertime.
It changed the paradigm of buying truffles. There's no more, is it, right? You can get some black mile, what's the, you know.
But being able to get truffles in the summertime and to match it with some of these summer foods.
Lobster.
Is a challenge that we are embracing.
And summer lobster around here, the soft shell lobster, especially the ones that are a little hard to crack, they're phenomenally juicy.
Yeah, super tasty.
And we're doing whole lobsters right now, popped out of the shell, a little brown butter, boom, 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 truffle, truffle, truffle. What else do you need? I don't
need a lot else.
You know what I haven't done yet that
you're going to say something really decadent. I can feel it.
Well, I'm not used to it in the summertime. It didn't even occur to me. You remember that we would occasionally do truffle burgers?
Oh, I remember.
I haven't done that yet. I'm gonna throw truffles on one of our burgers.
Truffle tartare.
Oh, that would be great.
That might be really good.
That'd be the perfect appetizer for the truffle burger. Sometimes it's good to own a restaurant, huh?
You know, people are like, oh, you eat all the sustainable food, you do really well. You know, you're in France, a little bit overweight. Like, it might be the truffle tartare followed by the truffle burger with a little bit of ice cream after.
You know, you can't really blame the truffle for the weight. You know what I mean? That's not what's putting it on. It's the burger. It's the bisque. It's the lobster and brown butter. See, that's what's hurting you. The buns go to the buns. You know, you can't really blame the truffle. It just inspires you to eat the other stuff. You know what I mean? You're not going to eat a truffle. Oh man, I think this is really, it's revolutionary, it's phenomenal, it's wonderful, and we're experiencing truffles with a whole range of foods.
Yeah, different foods. That's what I was starting to
You're
say before.
Truffles with local strawberries.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I mean,
it's really cool to for us, and we're experimenting right now. That's exactly what we're doing. We are experimenting with lobster with a whole new array of foods that we've never been able to experiment.
I mean, with truffles before. With a whole new array of foods.
Yes, that's what I said.
Lobster still going with just the truffles are new for lobster. Yeah, no, it's terrific. And by the way, and truffle oil and all that other stuff that you know, that don't cut it. It's not the same thing.
Hey,
not the real thing.
Listen,
it's okay.
I like truffle oil. Truffle oil is tasty, but it's not truffles.
Okay, well, I hope you guys have enjoyed the show as much as we certainly have. We're gonna go eat some truffles. I am Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys at restaurantguysradio.com. And hey, if you like the show, remember, tell a friend.